early that morning, we were told to get ready. You're going to have breakfast, and then you're going to get ready. So here again, not many guys showed up for breakfast, but the British were, how do you want your eggs? They do them special, up, down, whatever you want. They couldn't do enough for us as far as cooking. And they're the world's worst cooks, you know, the British. And lots of coffee and juice and stuff. So those that felt like it had breakfast. And right after that, I guess, some orders come out. All right, start getting ready for your trip. And the head, which is the washroom, the guys started shaving, showering, combing their hair. One guy's going crazy, couldn't find any aftershave lotion. You'd think we're going on a weekend pass. I and a lot of my buddies had little goatees. We'd take 5 minutes, make sure we're all just right, you know. Well, we'd never taken our clothes off. We got all new ODs and stuff way back at Weymouth. We'd never taken them off, so we're all dressed. But now we had to put on our field jacket. And then this impregnated coveralls. They would stand by themselves. They were so stiff. You had to put those on. They were impregnated to resist gas. Okay, so you put those on. Then on top of that, a bandolier of bullets, your gas mask, a life belt, inflatable life belt, oh, your backpack with your mess kit, and some rations, and a shovel, your steel helmet, you made sure it was fastened, your rifle, and we all put condoms over the end of the rifle.
Really? To keep
the water out, condoms. And everybody had to carry a bag, some sort of explosive. I remember I had fuse lighters, a bag of fuse lighters. Another guy had a bag of C2 pellets or compounds. Everybody had a bag to carry. Well, you've got 50, 60 pounds of equipment and stuff, you know. You can hardly move. I'm over in someplace there. I'm all straddled. I'm all bogged down with it. But I dig in. I pull out some photographs of the family. And I look at Eisenhower's letter. I read that again. The guy taps me on the shoulder. It's my good, good buddy. And he says, look, he opens up his eyes. Here's the wildest, gaudiest necktie I've ever seen in my life. And we started roaring with laughter. Somebody from home had sent it to him. And I remember him saying, I'm going to wear that son of a bitch on D-Day. And what could they do to him? Court-martial him?
Yeah. And his name again was?
Tom Legacy.
L-E-G-A-C-Y.
Legacy.
Okay.
From Niagara Falls. Good buddy. So we had quite a laugh about that. Chatted a little bit. And then we got the somebody wrote us, up, get up on deck. And then we just threw our arms around each other, still laughing, and we waddled up the deck. Right? The guys had all gathered along the rail, the different groups, you know, that were going to go. And we just kidded each other, wisecrack, got a lot of addresses, joked about, wished everybody good luck, you know, like that. And then when your group's turned, and you went over the cargo net down into the...
Now, had you gone down the cargo net before, or was this the first time?
No, we had practiced that. And no matter how many times you practice it, you can never predict. It's always a dangerous... One slip and you're gone. But the water was so choppy that our assault craft got bang up against the ship and it drifted away and it couldn't keep there and the goddamn net would go with it. You know. Sometimes you were laying spread eagle looking down at the water like this. Then it would let up and you straighten up again to get down. But as far as I know, we all made it down in there, okay, into the assault craft, an LCVP, which holds about 30 men. And right in the center is our big rubber raft full of explosives. So we got situated all around the rubber raft. And in the back, the stern, is where the guy steers it. He's a coxswain. Mm-hmm. And there's two of them. And I'm pretty sure they were Coast Guard men. Two of them. They're going to steer this thing into the beach.
Now, this is what time, roughly?
Oh, well, H-hour is 6:30. We're to be there at 6:33. It's about a two-hour run-in. 5, 4... Around 3 o'clock in the morning, probably. Yeah.
And how far out was it?
About 12 miles. 10 to 12 miles.
10 to 12 miles out into the channel.
This is our rendezvous. And our boat pulled away once it was loaded up, and we went to another area and circled, awaiting other craft to line up with us. And somebody, someplace, decided they were lined up, and he just gave the signal, and we took off, heading for the beach. About this time, the big guns opened up. The big battleships are behind us, and the noise, unbelievable noise, and the flash would light it up like daylight, the big orange flashes from the gun, and the noise, my God. But these are big guns, big. And they're presumably shelling the beach ahead of us, see? We heard some bombers go over, and presumably they are bombing the beach. And as we proceed, we pass a big flat barge full of rockets, and all of a sudden all these rockets, psh, 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 thousands and thousands of rockets head for the beach. And you begin to realize that this is going to be easy. How in the world can anything or anyone survive what they're receiving there, you know? It's just, there's going to be nobody alive when we get there. That was the attitude, the thought. Then we're still going along, and all of a sudden we pull alongside this, an LSM, the ones that carried the tanks. And we could tell they're the British version with the canvas collar, the DDT tanks. And we couldn't believe, because we're still quite a ways out. And all of a sudden they start letting the tanks off. The tank would disappear.
Right down.
You'd think the guy would know something's wrong here. Another one. Unbelievable. I always thought that the commander of that ship, he got scared or confused or something. He says, this is far enough for me, get him off, you know. That was what my feeling was. But as we passed, the guys start bobbing up to the surface, you know, floating like corks, screaming and yelling. And I thought, well, why the hell don't we stop and pull them over into our boats and stuff? And we just went right by them, you know. And right then I saw that, well, compassion is not part of war. You've got a mission to do. Nothing can interrupt it. Evidently, our officer or the coxswain's had orders not to save any. Other boats were assigned for that.
Uh-huh.
Our mission was to get to that beach and do our job. Nothing could distract us. So we went right by them. And as I say, the shelling continued. But as we got nearer the beach, a wave of infantry was just ahead of us. They hit at 8 hours, 6:30. First infantry.
So you
guys
had 3 minutes after you were supposed. The infantry is supposed to go in and clear.
Get the snipers.
Yeah.
Get the small arms fire. You know? So they would be kept down while we do our work. That was the plan. But a war, plans never go right. So when we get in there, our coxswain was very good. He took us right in, and the water was only about ankle deep where we
got
off.
Ankle deep, gee.
There are other cases where they let them off way out. They just drowned with all this equipment. But we got in good, right in the midst of the obstacles. And we all got off, as far as I know, we all got off okay. It just prior to the ramp coming down, we could hear the machine guns hitting the ramp. You know, we said, hey, something's going on here. We're not supposed to get this. The ramp went down, we all got off. The raft got off. And the first thing I did, the craziest thing, I took my rifle off. I aimed at a pillbox I thought. It happened to be a tracer that I could follow it all. I hit that damn pillbox. Why I did that, I don't know. It was an impulse I couldn't control. I just had to do it. I can't explain it. But it was the only shot I fired all day. Okay, the rubber raft is right by me. So I grabbed the tow rope and I start pulling the rubber raft. This is full of all our explosives. But I want to get it over where we could use it, the obstacles, you know. But as I pulled it, I found it getting heavier. I looked around. There's three bodies on it. There's two were face down. We're pretty sure who they were.
Yes.
And the other guy was face up. I know who he was.
Who was face up?
Charles Burton. And the two guys face down, I'm almost positive, and a lot of my buddies have confirmed this, that it was probably John Spinelli and Vincent DeAngelis, both two Auburn boys. So I'm pulling along, and all of a sudden a mortar comes over, hits the raft, and the whole goddamn thing goes. You know? I remember seeing a big black smoke and hearing a loud thing, but I guess it knocked me out or blacked me out because I somersaulted, I guess. Next thing I know, I'm on my hands and knees, spitting blood, and the worst headache you can imagine. My ears ringing.
When you were pulling it, was the raft still in the water or was it on land already?
Oh, no, we're still out in the water about that deep.
Ankle, you know, deep.
And gradually it was getting. See, we only had a half hour to do our job or else the tide would come in. So time was very, very critical. Well, there goes all our explosives, right? I saw a bunch of guys not far away, and I got over to them, and an officer was there, and he said, hey, look, we've lost our explosives. We have nothing to work with. It looks like it's every man for himself. Try to make the beach. We'll have to come back later in the day and do our job. So everybody took off, and we soon became separated. I was soon all by myself. Not only, and I stumbled across this guy. Well, he was one of my buddies,
yeah.
Joe Milkovic. And he was bigger than I was. I wasn't too big a guy. And I knew I could never carry him. But I knew if I left him there, he was going to drown. But he'd already been hit in the leg. His whole bone was exposed. It was awful. He was moaning. I don't think he even recognized me or knew who I was. But I thought of everything. We finally ended up getting behind him.
Getting behind him.
He's right here. His head's right here. I went under his armpits. Like this. And I would, in the sand, I could dig in and push myself. It was exhausting. I wasn't making much progress. A little, very slow. And I just hoped that, I knew the Germans saw me. I just said, well, who's ever looking at me, I hope they got pity and realize what I'm trying to do. And go shoot someplace else. Let me alone. That was my thought. Evidently, it worked, but nobody shot it. But all of a sudden, the tank pulls up beside me. The guy in the 30 looks down. He didn't have to. He just jumped down, unhesitating. And he said, something, you're in trouble here. Something. Let me help you. And he grabbed an arm, and I grabbed another arm. Then we, the two of us, we could drag him up to the sand. And he ran back to his tank. I don't know his name. But there again, as I said, fate sent that guy to me. I don't know his name or anything, but boy, it sure helped. And I could see Joe needed a medic bad. I'd given him what sulfa I had once I got him up there, sulfa. But there was nobody around. We were the only two within yards of the home. Maybe we were the first two to reach that point that day. I don't know, the first. But finally, I could see a medic. They all had a big Red Cross on their helmet. I got him over here, and he looked at Joe and said, pretty bad. I think he gave him a shot of morphine. He says the best thing to do is leave him here. We're supposed to have an aid station forming close by, and there's a hospital ship due to come in, and we'll get him on that. So I had to follow his suggestion. That was it. Right after that, I'm sitting there wondering what the hell am I going to do, and the sand dune, you know, is about that high. But it gave you protection from small arms fire, but not from mortars. Mortars can come over, you know. So I'm crouched up there, shaking, cold, freezing to death. You're all wet. You're soaking wet. Wondering what the hell's going on. What's going on? What happened to our plan? You know, what? I'm trying to make some reason out of all this chaos. And all I could see was chaos, catastrophe. Boats burning, smoking, dead men all along the water's edge, floating bodies, craft getting hit. It was awful, awful, awful. I said, oh, Jesus, this, something's not going right here. So, and during that time, this guy goes staggering along about 50, 60 yards from me, staggering. I don't know how the hell he was walking. His backpack was all hanging down his back. His clothes were in shreds. One arm dangled. It must have been hit, you know. He looked towards me. I don't know why, but somehow he looked back towards me, and half his face was gone. And something said, I know that guy. It was his stature, his walk, or his something about him. I said, I know that guy. And when he turned, I was able to see the necktie through all that bloody board and messed everything. There was no doubt who that was. Well, I'm petrified. I tried to shout to him. I didn't have any voice. I tried emotion. I couldn't move. The only thing that worked were my eyes. You know, I just kept watching him, watching him. He finally turned away and staggering, disappeared in a big cloud of smoke. And it's the last I ever saw him. But I knew who that was, and boy, that hurt. So I lay there, and I just cried like a baby for a while, I guess.